Welcome to Intelligence Community Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. The intelligence community has been in the news a lot lately, and not always for good reasons. Virginia Senator Mark Warner thinks the Trump administration has not treated the IC correctly, dragging it and its leaders into politics. Federal News Network's Tom Temin spoke with Warner about this and other national security issues.
I want to start with the big picture of the intelligence community. And just from your perspective as vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, what you see is the challenges there and what's ahead for the IC in the next year or two?
Well, the intelligence community has been, under this administration, unfortunately, the victim of a lot of abuse, a lot of disrespect. I've never heard a president be so cavalier about the product of the intelligence community, and for that matter, not having, I think, the appropriate respect for the men and women who keep our nation safe. And they do it in a different way than perhaps our folks in uniform, but they absolutely put their lives on the line, many of them on a regular basis, keeping our nation safe. The good news has been that even the Trump appointees, at least the Trump appointees within the intelligence community, for the most part, have been very solid in terms of resisting the pressure from this White House to try to become political, to skew their views. I've got a lot of respect for Dan Coats, who served as the Director of National Intelligence, who continued to emphasize the fact that, yes, Russia intervened in our elections, and yes, they'll be back, even as the president tried to confuse everyone on that matter. I'm proud of the fact that the president, or Director Coates, was willing to stand up and say, no, North Korea has not changed its activities. And the intelligence community has been continuing to speak truth to power. I've been candidly disappointed that the acting ODNI, in light of after the whistleblower came forward, has not done more to send a signal to the intelligence community that he will stand behind the community and stand up for the integrity of the whistleblower program. I think he may have done some things internally, but in terms of public comments, has been sadly absent. So I think the intelligence community continues to do a really solid job in unprecedentedly difficult times, particularly when we see the nature of our threats evolve, when we see a kind of refurbished Russia stepping forward less militarily, but more using cyber and tools of misinformation, disinformation in terms of their disruption of our political process, where we see China come forward in a very aggressive way militarily, in terms of economic theft of our intellectual property, in terms of dramatically increased, again, cyber and other capabilities. So the intelligence community's got a lot on its plate. Particularly the reemergence of China and Russia as kind of near-peer adversaries, while they still have to carry on the counterterrorism threat, where they still have to carry on challenges with Iran and North Korea and other hotspots around the world. And
sure,
I'm all for what they've done.
And do you get the sense, insofar as it's possible from your particular perch, that the thousands and thousands of employees who are just doing the day-to-day work are able to function unimpeded by all of this political maelstrom that is enveloping the top?
Well, Tom, I do think they feel the pressure. I get to, being the local guy, I hear from members of the community, or I hear from recently retired members of the community on a regular basis, and they say that they do feel under assault. I've not seen to date any evidence that anyone has bowed down to that pressure, or that there's been any attempt to kind of cook the books. And then for that, I'm grateful for people like Gina Haspel at the CIA and General Nakasone at NSA and Ashley at DIA. There's a number of good folks who I think are doing a good job protecting their people.
We're speaking with Virginia Senator Mark Warner. And just to delve into a couple of the issues that are facing the larger, I guess, intelligence-related aspects of the federal government and the public, there's a whole discussion about social media privacy and the ubiquity of video surveillance and cameras all over the place. What's the congressional thinking? It's kind of hard to, again, get through all of the noise surrounding places like Facebook to what is really the sentiment of Congress. And do you feel that, in general, Congress is technologically knowledgeable enough to be able to deal with some of these issues?
Well, on the front end, no, it's been kind of embarrassing. And I'm fortunate. My background was in technology before I came to government service. But I do feel like there's a lot of my colleagues that don't understand even how some of these platforms work. Candidly, the first time Zuckerberg came up and testified, it was fairly embarrassing, some of the questions that were asked. And I think, staying with kind of the intelligence community piece for a moment, part of the challenge that evolves in a emerging technology world is that with people having such a digital history now, the whole notion of going undercover or being a covert agent is more and more difficult when you've led a lifetime of digital fingerprints. You've got real challenges around. One of the areas I focused a lot on is security clearance reform. You know, we were not being able to recruit the best people into the intelligence community because it sometimes would take up to 2 years to get a security clearance. We've made progress on that, taking the number down from 725,000 to about 300,000 plus. So technology is affecting the operations of the intelligence activities and livelihood as well. On the question of social media, this is an area, and you know, I'm all for the innovation. I think Facebook and Twitter and Google have done some remarkably good things, but they also have created a deep, dark underbelly of the ability for bad actors, and in case of certain nation states, to really interfere dramatically electoral processes in a way that's both effective and cheap. I like to point out the fact that if you add up all the money Russia spent intervening in our elections in 2016, what they spent on the Brexit vote in the UK and what they spent in the French presidential elections, add that all together, it's less than the cost of one new F-35 airplane. So of course they will be back because they were effective and it is cheap. Now, how we deal with this on a social media basis, I think we are late to the game. This is, again, an area where I think is an example of America ceding its traditional technology leadership in terms of writing the rules of the game. Because we have not acted as a nation on issues like privacy, the Europeans have already acted in terms of what a bill called GDPR, which basically sets up basic privacy protections for Europe, and many of the tech companies are adhering to that. UK and Australia have started to go into actual content regulation for platforms like Facebook or YouTube. States, individual states like California, Nevada, and others are starting to take action because the federal government hasn't acted. And I think the social media companies starting to realize, oh my gosh, you know, we actually should have federal regulation because that might preempt or that might, you know, set the national or international standard. And when we do act, the old ceiling is going to become simply the floor of where the regulations go. So I would, and I've got a series of bills, all bipartisan, in this field. One area where there is some consensus is that the United States needs a privacy bill, and there are bipartisan efforts in the Senate working on that right now. I've then got a series of other add-ons. I believe privacy is necessary but not sufficient in terms of guardrails around social media. So, for example, very briefly, I will give you three or four bills that we've got. One, a bill that would say you ought to have a right to know when you're being communicated with, whether it's a human being or a bot. Second, we ought to have an ability to prohibit some of the manipulative practices that are called dark patterns, where you're on a site and you're trying to learn, you know, you're trying to investigate something, and you can either say yes, but you can't say no to continue the journey. You only get yes or learn more, or the whole host of activities that try to basically trick you into giving away your data. We need to prohibit that. Third is we need to be able to know what data is being collected on us and what that data is worth. Too many people think Facebook and Google are free. They are not free services. The exchange is they are sucking information about you onto their website, which they then monetize in an advertising model. I'm not saying there's anything per se wrong with that, but people ought to know what the bargain includes in terms of how much value your individual data has. And then I think we need to bring some ideas like that it used to come from the telecom business. There may be some listeners that remember when the old days when it used to be really difficult to move from one telephone company to another, but then we mandated number portability, and it's easy to switch companies now. Well, if we want more competition in this field, we need to make it easier to move your data. So data portability, you should be able to move, you're tired of Facebook, you should be able to move all of your information, including your cat videos, to a new site easily. And with that data portability ought to come interoperability, so you can, even if you move to NewCo, you can still talk to friends on Facebook. And then we need one other area that I think is even harder than the ones I've just outlined. Most of what I've talked about so far are kind of transparency issues, privacy issues, pro-competition issues. The other bucket is really goes to kind of the heart of the social media companies. And one is a question around identity validation. If people actually had to own their speech, you might not have the level of both falsehoods, hate speech, racist speech that's out there. Now, that might work in the United States. It might not. You might not want to have those same kind of requirements in a country like Egypt where, you know, people, if they want to try to issue statements, they're concerned about political repercussions. But identity validation is one issue. And then the other issue that has to be grappled with is that when these companies were founded in the late 90s, Congress decided that the Facebook, Google, Twitters of the world, the platform companies, would have no legal liability for any of the content that appeared on their platforms. That maybe made sense, and they gave an exemption called Section 230. That may have made sense back in the late 90s. But in 2019, when 65% of Americans get some or all of their news from Facebook and Google, maybe they need to be thought of less as just neutral platforms and have some of the same responsibility that your network has or other media companies have.
Virginia Senator Mark Warner, Vice Chairman of the Intelligence Committee, he's speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. We'll have more from this interview after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
We continue our interview with Virginia Senator Mark Warner, speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin.
Switching gears here completely, the security clearance process has moved to the Defense Department. Congress kind of let that happen. That was a Trump administration initiative. And are you watching that? Because that is of huge interest across the federal government and across all of the contractors who really
Absolutely.
Can't function without a good clearance process.
Well, when, as I mentioned earlier, when the clearance backlog had got to 740,000, when new CIA agents were waiting 2 years to get a security clearance, when contractors would move from one DHS contract to another and have to wait over 100 days, even though it was within the same agency, to get their clearances renewed for another contract, that is both inefficient. It makes us less secure as a nation. So we started a reform effort about 3 years ago, and we built certain provisions into the Intel authorization bills that we hope will be passed. They've already been passed out of the House and the Senate. We now have to get just the conference report passed. We've had great cooperation from Dan Coats, who was the Director of National Intelligence, and he had a great deputy named Sue Gordon, who was a real true career professional who, unfortunately, the White House forced out. And we've brought those numbers down from 740,000 to about, where I mentioned, roughly 300,000, where we've also put in place an ability to say we should do what's called continuous evaluation so that, you know, you don't simply review somebody's security clearance every 5 years regardless. You do it on a more ongoing basis, and you put the more folks in the higher priority positions to get more scrutiny than ones that may be in other positions. And then we are working towards, and this is really important, reciprocity, so that if you get a DHS clearance for the most part, maybe that should also work at, you know, the NSA, or that should work at NRO. There are obviously certain areas where a higher level of clearance will be required. There may not be full reciprocity, but the notion that we have each of these agencies and departments having slightly different sets of security criteria is really a 20th century mindset and way old school. And frankly, some of the things that are still happening where you've still got retired FBI agents literally traveling to a another jurisdiction to check the college records or to check the legal records to make somebody's sure nobody's been arrested. I mean, we should be able to do that much more efficiently online than kind of the old school way that we go through this process.
We're speaking with Virginia Senator Mark Warner. So you're watching that one, and it left the Office of Personnel Management kind of high and dry, which Congress corrected the revenue loss from the security clearance process with appropriations. But what are you thinking? This is outside the intelligence area, but just as a senator who is concerned with federal operations in general, what's your view of the future of the Office of Personnel Management?
Well, I think the Office of Personnel Management, they've had problems, but I think that function needs to remain independent. And I think it needs the office needs the ability to continue to function. Obviously, if you take the security clearance process and move it back to DOD, which I think from a kind of an efficiency standpoint probably made sense, and I'm watching carefully how that transition takes place. We didn't change out the people. It's somewhat changing the blocks about how they report up the chain. But I think it's net good. But I do think OPM is an entity, an agency that needs to be protected, that needs to make sure that you've got that ability to look out for the federal workforce on a kind of macro basis.
Virginia Senator Mark Warner is the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin there. Hear the rest of the interview after one more quick break. I'm Eric White.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
Here is our final segment with Senator Mark Warner, ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He spoke with Federal News Network's Tom Temin.
Getting back to the intelligence viewpoint, there is a new agency, a renamed agency, concerned with cybersecurity and infrastructure at the Department of Homeland Security, CISA. Mm-hmm. And what's your thought on how well the various whole of government parts, IC, the military where it's appropriate, and the civilian branch like DHS, are working in concert with respect to some of those issues like exfiltration of data, both from contractors and the government itself and so on?
Well, I think CISA was more than a name change. I think it was important that you get the name change so you could say to both government and the private sector, this is where we're going to try to concentrate a lot of our cybersecurity expertise. Chris Krebs, who's running that department, I think is doing a darn good job, and I commend him. He's been very active on cyber writ large. He's been very active working with us on the intel side about some of the challenges coming out of China related to cyber. He's been, you know, one of the few people in the administration who recognizes the importance of election security, so I give him high marks. I feel like we still are behind the curve on having that whole of, not just whole of government, but whole of society approach to cyber. We still have only done one small piece of legislation that is a voluntary information sharing. I still believe that in certain critical infrastructure areas, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and I think that we may need a level of mandatory reporting, again, from the private sector if you're in critical infrastructure domains. I think one of the areas that I've watched play out for the last couple of years that I think we're going to finally get done, but boy, it shouldn't have taken this long, is, you know, as we move into the so-called Internet of Things, all the devices will be connected to the Internet from your toaster oven to your refrigerator to that IoT would be all the devices on your driverless car that connect to the Internet. And one of the things that's just crazy to me is we don't have even minimum security standards for these IoT devices. So I've had bipartisan legislation with Cory Gardner from Colorado for a number of years, and we've got it out of committee now that would require, at least at the federal government level, if we're spending federal dollars, we're only going to buy devices that have de minimis security. So they don't have embedded passcodes, so they are patchable. You know, basic stuff. But right now we're spending our federal tax dollars on buying this equipment and these devices that may have huge vulnerabilities in them. I think about, you know, a nuclear power plant or a dam. You may put all your cyber protections possible in terms of your traditional equipment, but if you, you know, in the staff kitchen, if there's an IoT connected toaster oven, the bad guys could come in through the toaster oven and get into the overall security of the overall dam or nuclear power plant that just happens to be connected through the staff kitchen. So there's a huge amount of additional vulnerability that we have to take care of. And the fact that we've not passed this legislation is really pretty absurd.
You've been listening to our interview with Senator Mark Warner, speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. You can find this interview online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Intelligence Community Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, a part of the Federal News Network.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, river.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here?
Of course.
Who's asking? I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like. Consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think he would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, one in four people 65 and older will experience a fall. And many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home. So take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors. And install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.